Well, here's a chilling statistic. The Department of Veterans Affairs estimates that a veteran takes his or her life every 80 minutes. We've spoken about this before, and because of the terrific reporting of people like NPR's Daniel Zwerdling and our next guest, the military is now more responsive to suicides, adding mental health personnel, beefing up suicide prevention efforts. But still, 18 veterans a day are taking their lives. A tragedy. But also, often still, a bureaucratic nightmare. Major Jeff Hackett was, by all accounts, an outstanding Marine, plucked from the ranks of the enlisted to be an officer, more than a quarter century in the military, including two tours in Iraq, which he survived. 13 of his men didn't. And haunted by that fact, Jeff Hackett took his own life in 2010. His family has been battling for benefits ever since. Washington Post military reporter Greg Jaffe has been following this story and joins us from that newspaper studios. Greg, just give us some context here, because Major Hackett was showing signs of distress before he retired and then killed himself. He wanted to get out earlier than he did, but the Marines wouldn't let him?
Yeah, after his first tour, he was really struggling. During that first tour, he has what he thinks is a heart attack. It turns out to be an anxiety attack, and they end up sending him all the way back, essentially to Kuwait and then to Europe for tests before returning him to Iraq. He comes home from that tour really shaken and basically says, "I can't do this anymore. I'm not helping the Marine Corps. I'd like to retire." And they say, "No, you need to stay in. We need you to do one more tour," leading an explosive ordnance disposal team, essentially a team that goes looking for IEDs on the road. "We need you to lead your company back for one more tour."
And in the first tour, I think 8 of his men died. He saw all of their bodies. In the second tour, 5 men die.
Right. And you can really see the deterioration in him over the course of that second tour and the emails that he sends home. You know, he really comes to blame himself. Anxiety gets worse. His anger gets worse. And if you talk to the Marines who served alongside him, they'll say he really was a changed man that second tour. He just wasn't right.
By the way, despite everyone seeing that, when he retired, the military didn't catch his mental health problems?
No, neither the military nor the VA. I mean, I think you can fault the Marine Corps for not catching his mental health problems when he was in the Marine Corps. I think you can fault the VA for not catching them as he was leaving, because, you know, he answers a questionnaire as to whether he's having mental health problems, and he says no. But if you look through his medical files, you know, he's hospitalized twice for anxiety. He has a series of fairly public breakdowns that really should have triggered people to take a second look at this guy, even if he was saying he was fine.
Well, you talk about a time where he was invited to give a speech at a Marine ball, and it was supposed to be a very up affair, you know, kind of a booster speech, and he's literally sobbing through it.
Yeah, he's sobbing and he's very angry and he feels like he's a failure and he blames the Marine Corps and others for their failure in the death of his troops. You know, and this is a Marine Corps birthday ball, you're right, which is a sort of celebration at the Marine Corps. And, you know, people in the audience say, "Gosh, that was not right. There was something wrong." But nobody ever kind of steps up to force him to get help.
Okay. Well, when he died, he was $460,000 in debt. Explain sort of how the spiral we've been talking about also led to a financial spiral.
Part of it was a house, and he just failed to make payments on the house. He had trouble finding work, in part because he was so mentally disturbed. He gets essentially a menial job working in an oil refinery, essentially digging ditches and checking gauges. I mean, and this is a Marine Corps major who should be qualified for a fairly high-paying job. So, you know, it's the house purchase. It's I think his mental wounds make it hard for him to find good employment. And then he, I think, makes a series of bad financial decisions just because he's not acting rationally.
Well, he's also in the middle of, you know, this high unemployment that the whole country was seeing. And as we said, all of this just spirals out of control. He kills himself in 2010, leaving a widow, Danielle, 4 sons, $460,000 in debt, and he receives no compensation from the government, no life insurance after his death. Now, walk us through what happened here, because we know that in general, when one commits suicide, you forfeit collecting life insurance. I mean, that's how life insurance works. But his family and his supporters, of course, say this was a war injury, PTSD. And it sounds as if, in reading through your article, his benefits would have been paid if he'd killed himself while on active duty. So would you slowly walk us through the insurance part? Why can't his family collect on the life insurance policy he paid for 26 years when he was a Marine?
The VA found that his death was service-connected. In other words, that his service in Iraq and Afghanistan caused the PTSD which killed him.
And by the way, we should say that makes him one of the his family lucky in a way, because there are, as you've reported, there are other troops that have killed themselves, and the VA has not recognized it as connected to the war. So it goes over that hurdle, but then what?
Yeah, and his widow, in making that case, had advantages that most widows don't. The commandant of the Marine Corps, this four-star general who runs it, took an interest in this case and asked a very prominent Washington attorney who's a friend of his to help Donnell build the case that her husband had died of a service-connected wound. So that law firm, which is Akin Gump, did dozens and dozens of interviews with Marines who served with him, you know, had access to psychiatrists and doctors. So they were able to do something that 99.9% of the families in this situation can't do.
And I'm going to jump in again to say that the reason that the commander of the Marine Corps, General James Amos, noticed this story is that he read about Major Hackett in an article that you'd written. That caught his attention. And he was so troubled that, as you said, he went to a prominent Washington lawyer and literally wrote to him, "There's no doubt Major Hackett was suffering from post-traumatic stress," in capital letters, "none whatsoever."
Right. And I will say, unless General Amos gets involved and unless the attorney gets involved, I don't think the first part happens, which is convincing the VA that this is service-connected. So that happens. And then I think the lawyers and his widow assume, well, okay, he died of a war wound. We'll get the insurance payment, which is a substantial amount. It's $400,000, but that doesn't happen. And essentially, the VA says, well, he should have continued to make his monthly payments when he left the military, and he failed to do that and therefore forfeited the policy.
And he did. In addition to falling behind on his home, he fell behind on his insurance payments.
You know, he never made them from the beginning. I think he just wasn't he didn't see it as important or necessary or chose not to do it. Now, the issue is that under the way the policy is written, if you're found to be totally disabled, either mentally or physically, you don't have to make these payments for 3 years. Essentially, they realize that you're incapable of doing it, and the federal government essentially amnesties you from making them. So then it turned into an argument as to whether Major Hackett was totally disabled or capable of making these payments. And the VA found that because he had worked for essentially 9 months at this oil refinery in a minimum wage job before he was laid off, that showed he was capable of employment and therefore should have made these payments.
It's just such a catch-22, because that's what came back to derail all this, the military counting that menial, low-paying job at the oil refinery as, you know, sustainable work. And if you can do that, you know, you can't get the benefits. But also, as you said, he should have made those payments. We're speaking to Washington Post reporter Greg Jaffe about a former Marine who killed himself as a result of PTSD. Everyone agrees, but as we've been hearing, because of this bureaucratic nightmare, he's been denied, his family's been denied his insurance. Back in a minute, here and now. Welcome back to our conversation with Washington Post military reporter Greg Jaffe about his recent story on the suicide of retired Marine Major Jeff Hackett and his family's subsequent battle for benefits. As we were just hearing before the break, the Veterans Administration, everyone acknowledged that post-traumatic stress disorder caused Jeff to kill himself. But they denied his widow, Danelle, a $400,000 insurance claim because they said the PTSD didn't completely disable him. He had a menial job at an oil refinery for a few months. Greg, you say the phrase the military uses is substantially gainful employment. If he had that, and they counted that job at the oil refinery as substantially gainful employment, he could not be counted as disabled, so he could not be excused for not paying his premiums on his military insurance policy, which he didn't do for a little while after he retired from the Marines, even though he'd paid them for 26 years prior. And for that reason, that he skipped those payments and he had a little bit of a job, the benefits were withheld.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And then the argument becomes, to a certain extent, what does that mean? Does that mean that you just held a job for whatever period? Or if you hold a job well below your sort of what you should be able to do. I mean, he's a major in the United States Marine Corps. His lawyers argue that he should have qualified for a job essentially with a six-figure salary. And the fact that he wasn't able to land such a job, the fact that he took a job so far below his skill level proves that he was incapable of substantially gainful employment. And the people at the refinery will say, we could tell there was something deeply wrong about this guy even when he was working here.
Well, it seems as if there's another question this raises, which is you're asking somebody who is having severe mental issues but doesn't want to acknowledge them to not look for work. In other words, you know, here's somebody who's, you know, trying to make his home payments, trying to make all his payments, trying to find work. And what the military is essentially saying, oh, no, no, that was a mistake. You had to be completely out of work and disabled in order to qualify. Well, you're asking people who are mentally ill, who don't want to recognize that they're mentally ill, and by the way, may not be able to prove to the military that they are mentally ill, you're asking them not to work.
Yeah, and I think part of this problem arises from the fact that the system in some cases is designed to catch people who are faking. So, you know, say I'm totally disabled because of a mental illness, but they really don't have it. Where it really works against you is somebody like Hackett, who was denying his severe mental illness, didn't want it, wasn't requesting any benefits. And so there's no kind of outreach to those people to say, hey, there really is something not right with this person.
Yeah.
We need to help them.
Yeah. So his family doesn't receive the $400,000 in benefit. We mentioned that they were $460,000 in debt when he died. What's happened to them?
Well, his widow moved back to West Virginia, where she's from, and actually an anonymous donor, a former Marine, purchased her a house in the little town where she's from. Believe it or not, her youngest son recently enlisted in the Marine Corps and got through boot camp, and he's serving now in North Carolina and is married to another Marine who's in Afghanistan currently.
How does she feel about that?
How does the mom feel about it?
Yeah.
I think she has mixed feelings. She's worried about it. She's also very proud of him. You know, her son said went off to boot camp, he took his dad's dog tags with him and that he held them and that those helped him get through, you know, a Marine Corps boot camp, which is not an easy or pleasant experience. And so I think she's proud of him for doing that. And he sees it very much as a tribute to his dad.
So she, you know, as despite this, you know, just terrible story, she becomes one of the lucky ones, because even though she lost their home in Wyoming and the bank repossessed their cars, some, you know, heroic anonymous former Marine buys a home for her in rural West Virginia. But as you write, there are at least six other former service members with similar cases who, you know, maybe their story didn't catch the attention of these high-powered people. They also committed suicide after their veterans' life insurance policies expired. Is anyone in the military talking about changing some of these? It's almost like Kurt Vonnegut-like rules.
Not that I know of so far. I mean, I know my sense is that the commandant of the Marine Corps is a little frustrated, and that he realizes that this was one case that he was able to make a difference, but there are lots more that are falling through the cracks that he's not getting. And so we know of these six that I described. There are likely hundreds more similar, I think, although it's impossible to know because you really can't track it well. But as far as I can tell, there's been no inclination to sort of revisit this case or others.
And do we have any idea who this former Marine is who bought a home for the widow of Jeffrey Hackett?
I do know who it is, yeah. And he asked me not to say who it was. He wanted to remain anonymous, but I think felt an obligation and felt badly for what had happened to Danelle and her family. And it does raise an interesting question to me. I mean, we do say that, you know, these mental wounds are real wounds. And the Army and Marine Corps have gone to great lengths to say, you know, this is a wound as real as a gunshot wound. But if you die of a gunshot wound, you know, your family is taken care of. If you die of this wound, you know, not necessarily, and in many cases, not at all. So it does raise a question. I mean, Danelle will say her husband died of a battle wound. It just took him 2.5 years to die.
Yeah.
And in many ways, it was a death that for them was more painful and more agonizing than, you know, a quick death if he had been blown up in Iraq and Afghanistan or Afghanistan. All of those are tragic.
Yeah, but this was drawn out.
right. And very painful for the family.
Yeah. Well, Greg Jaffe, just to that Marine, just tell him that's cool.
Yeah, I know. It was a completely selfless gesture.
Yeah. Greg Jaffe, Washington Post military reporter. We'll link you to all of his writing at hereandnow.org. Greg, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
And tomorrow, President Obama will host a dinner for Iraq War vets. We'll speak with one who's grateful but wonders, what about a parade?
I think the American public really wants something like that to happen. We have heard from countless supporters saying that they want to honor the troops and they want to do it in a big fashion across the country so that all the veterans of Iraq can participate, not just 200 in a state dinner.
That's tomorrow. Latest news is next, here and now.